RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Hey, and welcome back to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And this is a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, which has discussion and commentary on the various episodes. And this week, we are going to cover Episode 3 and Episode 4 of Season 1. That's Lone Gunman, which aired originally on October 24th, 2012. And An Innocent Man, which aired on Halloween in 2012, October 31st, 2012. Just in case you don't remember which episodes these are, Lone Gunman was the one where Oliver confronted Deadshot, who was a hired killer that ended up targeting Oliver's stepdad, Walter. And then at the very end of that episode, Diggle discovers Oliver's secret. And in kind of in the continuation of that, in An Innocent Man, there's more on the Oliver Diggle storyline. But the big part is there's a guy who's wrongly accused of murder, and Oliver breaks into Iron Heights prison to basically rescue this innocent man and ends up getting arrested at the end of that episode for being the vigilante. But before we get into discussing the episodes for this show, we wanted to give a little bit of news that has come up here. So the first thing was that the premiere of Arrow, Josh, I don't know if you saw this one, but it is the CW's most watched show in 3 years, and it was like the highest premiere since The Vampire Diaries, which I don't know if you watch that or I don't know if what else you might be watching on TV or anything like that. But
well, I don't watch a whole lot of TV unless it's something I'm interested in, and Arrow was one of those. So I don't watch Vampire Diaries, but loving Arrow so far.
Yeah, so the ratings for this were the highest that a CW show has had since the premiere of The Vampire Diaries, which wasn't as high. And also, you know, it's boosting, I guess, Supernatural's ratings and stuff like that. So that is good news that it seems to have found an audience. Now, it is a it is an 8 o'clock show, so it's a good lead in to these, to the other shows like Supernatural and stuff like this. And for their target audience, which I think is probably the tween to teen crowd and you know, maybe obviously with the two of us, you know, older audience and stuff like that.
I'm part of the teen crowd, aren't I? Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's however you feel. You're as old as you feel inside your shriveled up old body.
I think they're also, you know, they're targeting a big group right now. That's not so much age group, but genre, which is superhero and comic book fans. So,
well, and also archery. I don't know if you've noticed this. I was talking to someone at work about this, and archery has just become huge. I mean, you started out, and I don't really know which came first in terms of popularity, because I guess the Hunger Games had archery in the books, but you know, you've got the Hunger Game movie with Katniss and her, bow and arrow. You have the Avengers from last summer with Hawkeye and his arrow, and now you've got Arrow, Oliver Queen, with his bow and arrow. So that seems to be kind of the weapon of choice now.
Well, look at that. We're bringing worlds together. You know, it's getting away from the technology and going back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they're Walking Dead too. Speaking of technology going away, right? Because you've got Daryl on The Walking Dead with his crossbow. So. I mean, it is kind of, it's a perfect weapon, right? You don't have to, I mean, I guess you have to be skilled, but you don't have to, you know, have a lot of, like you say, technology or anything like that. And you just got to make sure you have enough arrows, I guess, in your quiver. So,
yeah, well, and there's advantages to that, to the bow and arrow over like say a gun. So mm-hmm. Especially for somebody that's, keeping their identity secret and trying to keep a relatively low profile, but.
True. So the other piece of news we've got is the fact that Arrow has now actually been picked up for a full season. Initially, it was set up, I think it was just a 16-episode season that was originally set up, and on October 22nd, the CW picked it up for a full season. Technically, I think it's only 23 episodes when a full season is 24 now, but they were really impressed by the aforementioned ratings that they were getting and decided that they wanted to go ahead with it. So hopefully that's good news that at some point it will actually get picked up for a second season, which at this point I think that's probably a given, but we haven't heard a final word on that at this point.
Well, they seem to be doing a good job keeping up the momentum and the excitement. So, and I've heard such great things from fans about it. They're really digging it a lot. So, you ready to get into this episode?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
All right. Well, one of the things that I wanted to bring up is the island flashbacks, which I think is ties the episodes really nicely together so far. It kind of breaks them up a little bit. So, you can start putting some of these mysteries together, which seems to be one of their methods of storytelling I'm enjoying a lot.
Yeah, they are thematic. I've noticed the whatever Oliver is dealing with on the island or in Starling City in the present, they do appear to be connected thematically in some way, and sometimes even more so than thematically through actual plot elements.
Yeah, like for example, in this one, it was showing, you know, it shows how he got his abilities, you know, seemed to be like one ability at a time or so.
Right.
This, the episode number three, Lone Gunman, it was about killing, and he, on the island, Yao Fei, who was the man that rescued him by shooting him in the shoulder.
Yeah, that's, what a great way to rescue him, right?
Yeah, that's not the recommended method of rescuing most people, but seemed to work for him. Okay, and he is teaching him about killing. So he presents him with a chicken, and Oliver stated, you know, he's never killed anything before, and he's kind of making him get used to the idea of having to kill to survive on this island, or he's not going to be able to do it. So,
well, actually, I'm sorry to interrupt, Josh. The Innocent Man actually was the flashback with the killing of the chicken.
That's right.
One.
That's right.
The Lone Gunman, I think, only had one, maybe two flashbacks in it, and it was basically it was where we first meet him. We get to see the magic herbs that cure Oliver. From the poison, and then. Yao Fei is I guess showing him that it's dangerous to be alone. Well, actually, I don't know that Oliver can understand it. We get to see the subtitles because he's speaking in Chinese, which Oliver knows it's Chinese, but he knows he also doesn't understand it. And he says that it's dangerous to be alone, which is sort of what that Lone Gunman episode is talking about too, because it's about Oliver trying to do all of the stuff on his own, and you sort of start seeing everything unraveling for him because he's going after this gunman, and he ends up getting shot and almost passing out. Right, he can't he managed to take, like I said, he took these magic herbs, and then he's got to go hunting for, you know, who this guy is. He's got to bring in help with the. Who's the Russian mob, the Bratva?
Yeah.
There's something else, you know. Okay, so he knows Russian. Well, I think we knew he knew Russian from the
previous
episodes. Yeah,
he spoke Russian in one of the other episodes.
In the first two, yeah. So, but you're right. You know, there's definitely this thematic element to them talking about killing in the Innocent Man episode. The other guy on the island, Yao Fei, who I got that name from the list on IMDb or on CW or something like that. I don't think he's actually introduced himself yet, and I don't know that this name is someone that actually pops up in the comic books. But he's trying to help Oliver heal, and he puts, like you said, this chicken down for him to kill. Otherwise, you know, that he's not going to be able to eat. And Oliver's got to, you know, figure out how's he going to survive if he can't kill this chicken, because you know, it's, I guess it's like that circle of life sort of thing.
Well, and he's really forcing him to do this. It was the spoiled rich kid, you know, he's has to learn how to do this or he's going to die quickly. Because he just wasn't ready. So he's not like a wise old a master that's going to kind of slowly teach him the lessons. You know, it's like, hey, you do this now or that's it.
Oh, so you're seeing it as the fact that he wouldn't actually do, you know, the whole teach a man or, you can fish, you give a man a fish and you can feed him for a day, but teach a man to fish and he can survive for his lifetime, right? You think it's that kind of tough love?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's give a man a fish, he eats for a day, and shoot a man through the shoulder with an arrow, and you're going to save his life. So I think in some way, and I haven't figured out exactly why, but it almost feels like Yao Fei needs him for some reason. I'm still not entirely sure why he saved his life in the first place. Mm-hmm. There might be a more of a connection that, you know, he knows more about Oliver than we're seeing right now, but it almost feel like he's hoping that Oliver can help him survive on the island or get off the island or whatever it is that they're that he's hiding from.
Right. Well, and in the first episode when Oliver was rescued, he was wearing, you know, this island made archer costume that looks kind of like his Green Arrow costume that he wears on the show,
right?
Which it appeared to be the same thing that Yao Fei was wearing, but of course we didn't see him. We didn't see Yao Fei at that point. So, you know, yeah, there's obviously something else going on. I mean, I think like we talked about last time, a lot of mysteries on this. But looking at the killing aspect, we talked about this on the last show as well too, with, he doesn't hesitate at taking life, and we weren't sure why, and here we find out a little bit more, you know, that he basically has learned how to kill on the island now. I mean, granted, it's just a chicken, but you know, I mean, I think I don't hunt, but I'm sure that you know, people that are out hunting for their own food and stuff like that, you know, I'm sure there's something else that goes on inside you, you know, I mean, you know, for having to take that life. I don't know.
Sure. And I know a lot of people, I was going to say cultures, but I know that, you know, people that I know that hunt have done this same thing too. But the very first time you kill an animal on your first hunt, there's this sort of connection thing. And, you know, sometimes they'll have you eat the heart or, you know, just make that connection to that first animal that you kill. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, he definitely did that with this chicken, and there's obviously more to come. I mean, he learns to be much more brutal than that.
Oh, yeah.
And what I'm hoping is throughout the show in Starling City, I hope he starts to struggle with that a little bit more. You know, I hope that becomes one of his, I don't want to say weaknesses, but something that he's starting to learn about himself, that in order to be a hero, you know, it shouldn't be so easy to take a life. Mm-hmm. in the society that he's in now, because he's not on the island anymore.
Right.
So.
Well, and he's fighting against, at least what we've seen so far in Starling City, he's fighting against these really, you know, nasty criminals that would probably not hesitate about, you know, killing people. I mean, you know, they poison people or they put in bad smoke detectors so that, you know, people die in fires. I mean, they're worse probably than anything that Oliver has had to go through. You know, they may not be pulling the trigger themselves, but they're on his list of names. So he feels that he's got to take him down. The one thing that I was thinking about that we saw in this episode, when you had brought up the idea of the, you know, how easy it is for him to kill or at least move towards killing. He takes Jason Brodeur, who is the toxic waste dumper guy from Innocent Man. That's kind of the name that he's going after for that one. And he chains him to the train tracks with the train coming. Basically to quote, torture him, I guess, to get the name of whoever he needs out of him, or, you know, whatever the information he needs to free the guy that's stuck in prison. My question
is, it's like the equivalent of, you know, holding a guy off of the ledge of a building until until he tells you what he needs to know.
Right. Well, like in episode 2, I think it was, where he hung the guy upside down and fired arrows at his head, you know?
He's getting creative. I like that he, you know, he thinks of new things, you know? Yeah. He doesn't like to do the same thing every
time. Yeah, I don't think we've seen the same thing so far. You know, he shoots a guy through the hand and pins him to the wall and stuff. Well, actually, I think it was the same guy here for that one. But, you know, the train's coming, the guy screams out what he knows, and then Oliver still, he waits to let him up. And he doesn't actually let him up by releasing him physically right there. He shoots an arrow, you know, to break the chain or whatever it is. So the guy falls off the track just before the train comes. But I don't know. What do you think? Would he really have let the train hit this guy if he didn't give the, you know, what he needed to know?
I think at this point in the series, I feel like he would have. At least, you know, I don't know. If he didn't get what he needed to know, he might not have, because he probably would keep at it until he did. But it's almost more of a 24 kind of, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get this information kind of attitude that he has. So, but he hasn't seemed to show much hesitation in killing people in some of the fights and stuff. Now, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't all important people. They might have just been kind of, you know, bodyguards or henchmen or whatever. Mm-hmm. At this point, I think he might have. He even mentioned to Deadshot there that, you know, when Deadshot said that, you know, you've taken lives, and he says, you know, it was necessary. It was for right. the greater good or whatever he said there. But so he admitted that he did it, and you haven't really seen much hesitation in him doing it. So
right. Well, and then at the end of Innocent Man, there's the, when he goes into the prison, there's the, again, it's like the highest henchman you can be. I don't know if we ever got his name, but he's basically Jason Brodeur's like right hand man, who goes in to or hires somebody to get into the prison, or he goes in himself, and Oliver, you know, captures him or subdues him, and basically just pretend, you know, continues to beat him senseless. Where I think Laurel right after that tells her dad, you know, she was all smitten with the vigilante because, oh, you know, he's so cool and he's fighting for justice the same way I am. But at the end, she says that, you know, if I hadn't interrupted him, he would have just killed that guy because he was just beating him senseless, you know, in the face, you know, because why does your face keep hitting my hand? And and she says, basically, I think the detective says, you know, you understand that he's dangerous. And she says, yeah, he has a lack of remorse. And I think that is what we're seeing. He's been away from society for 5 years, and he's just not connected anymore. He has taken his emotions and he has tamped them down enough. I mean, if he's just been on this island with, you know, this one other guy for however long, I mean, you know, again, I go back to kind of thinking about Castaway and Tom Hanks, and, you know, he just couldn't adapt to coming back to society after being gone for so long. So, it, you know, it obviously takes him a while to adjust. And we see other elements of that in these two episodes with Oliver trying to talk to his mom and talk to his sister and talk to Laurel. And, you know, at one point he's smiling and his sister says, that's a weird thing on your face. What is that? And she's like, oh, it's a smile. And he's like, oh, yeah, ha, ha, ha. But, you know, it's taken him 4 episodes to get to the point where he's smiling and not just scowling all the time.
Yeah, well, and you know, that fits in with the idea of him not being able to do this alone, just like, you know, what they were saying on the island.
Right.
I think that in order for him to become that hero, he's going to need these people that keep him grounded, you know. Diggle's keeping him grounded. Laurel's keeping him grounded and doesn't even realize exactly what's going on, you know. But
she doesn't realize it, yeah. Oh, and his sister too, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're all – you can see, I mean, and this is, you know, this is pretty common in shows, you know, by the end of the show, they've kind of learned some sort of lesson. And you can tell within the show that he's picking up here and there. Oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't be so brutal. Oh, you know, maybe I should go about this in a different way. Maybe I shouldn't be seen on video cameras in a prison. So
right, right. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of growth that the character's having. Like you said, learning to that. Being alone is dangerous, whether it's on an island, you know, you need someone else to kind of watch your back, or in the vigilante hero game, you kind of need that sidekick. And we're going to jump back to that here in just a couple minutes. But before we do that, I wanted to just get into a couple first appearances of characters. There are three we've got here to talk about tonight. One we've already touched on quite a bit here. It's Yao Fei. And now technically we saw him at the end of episode two, but we really, you know, start, I don't even want to say we get to know what this guy's about, because we don't know anything about him. Like I said, we don't even really know his name yet. Like I got that just from the kind of the show notes on the web. But he doesn't seem to equate to any comic book character as I know it from any of these island storylines. And in going back through some of the comics over the last week here, the all of his time on the island was basically like he got stuck on an island. There's a few, you know, scenes of him surviving for himself, and then he gets rescued. So it's not like he teamed up with anybody on the island, or, you know, it's just like he learned how to be Green Arrow on his own, you know, with his own force of will. What we're seeing here is Yao Fei is the mentor. He's the Mr. Miyagi, you know, I mean, almost literally too, right? Because you've got this Asian character that, you know, is training him. Doesn't appear to speak any English until the very end, you know, has gone through what basically, I think, two episodes here with speaking Chinese and frustrating Oliver. And, you know, I mean, Oliver is in really no shape to do anything. He's just been shipwrecked. And then he's been, like you said, shot through the shoulder with an arrow, which Yao Fei just pulls out. He gives him some magic herbs to supposedly suppress, I guess, whatever the, you know, pain. Well, maybe not the pain, but the infection or anything like that, and pulls this arrow out. So, I think that's going to be the impetus, the character that trains Oliver and shows him the ropes. Obviously, he's very good with an arrow, so, you know, it seems very likely that that's what's going to happen here.
Hey, can I jump in real quick with Yao Fei? Just a quick Wikipedia search of him says that he is actually in the DC Comics universe.
Oh, is he?
It says he's a superhero known as Accomplished Perfect Physician and a member of the Great, which, you know, I'm not sure that's the best superhero name, but but he's a member of the Great Ten, who's, I guess, a team of Chinese superheroes. It mentions that actually this version of Yao Fei in the TV series is kind of a combination of abilities of different Great Ten members. So
interesting.
Didn't know much about him either, but that's what that says on Wikipedia. So,
well, of course, Wikipedia can is always you know, extremely accurate and up to date, so we'll trust them for now. So, well, that's really interesting. I mean, just in my, I've read probably the main Green Arrow story. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe he's not even in, I don't know. Does it say if he's in? Let me see if says he's in a Green Arrow story or if it's just other characters. So,
yeah, I'm not even sure. It didn't even really say what comic that was in, but I did think that was interesting that they're pulling again from the comics, even the kind of minor characters, and putting them in Arrow, which you can tell that the writers of the show are experts in the DC universe. So
yeah. Oh, it looks like he was his first appearance was in a series called 52, which was a kind of a countdown series for one of their year long events that they were doing a few years ago. So. Well, that's pretty cool. So anyway, I think that Yao Fei, like I said, is just going to be kind of the mentor character and kind of teach him the ropes. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that Oliver's learned in his time between getting stranded, which is where we see him now, and then coming back to Starling City. So there's a huge character arc there, and I think we'll see more that Yao Fei is very responsible for that.
Yeah, I like that character, so I can't wait to see more about him. So, well, the next character that's making their first appearance is a character named Felicity Smoke. She in this TV series, she how would you describe her? She's a computer
blonde
expert,
and she's cute. And oh, right, yeah, she's an IT. Yeah, she's like the IT department at Queen Consolidated.
Yeah, right. And it seems to be overqualified for her job.
yes.
seems to know quite a bit about getting information. I really like this character because, number one, gives a little bit of comic relief. Her character is not serious, and she's pretty straightforward with what she says and when she's talked to both Oliver and also in another episode where she talks to Walter, his stepdad.
Yeah.
So I like that. I do like that. She's smart. She's pretty. Okay. I gotta stop talking about her because she's pretty exciting. But I also wanted to say that she is also from the DC universe.
Yeah.
She was a character named Felicity Smoke in Firestorm. Was a DC comic back in I want to say the 80s.
Yeah, the mid 80s, and then they've rebooted it in several different ways. Uh-huh.
Right. So and she was in Firestorm anyway. She was a character who she and him didn't get along, and eventually I think she even sued Firestorm for. It was a very complicated story, but
yeah. Just quickly, and as she was the stepmom, Firestorm is made up of two characters that kind of fuse together to become this a teenage boy named Ronnie Raymond, and then Professor Stein, who is the guy that was working on something that created Firestorm, and she's Ronnie's stepmom in this, so she marries the dad, and at some point, yeah, like you said, there's. It went from being just the stepmom to then being all sorts of very complicated things. So entirely different sort of character. I really don't think that – well, she doesn't appear to be old enough to be a stepmom for somebody. She doesn't appear to be married. It would be neat if they could bring Firestorm into the show in some fashion. But again, as we discussed last time, they're not planning on doing any sort of metahuman character. Yeah, superpowered characters or anything like that. But right. I think the episode 3, Lone Gunman, was the first episode she was in. She was actually in both these episodes. And like you said, I think it was a really necessary comic relief. Both these episodes had some really funny parts in it, which I think was lacking in the first two episodes, especially in the pilot. The pilot was just very straightforward. It didn't have a lot of sub-storylines, which is probably done for a reason since it's the pilot, right? They just kind of have the main storyline with Oliver coming home and then a couple, you know, just introducing him around with all the different subsidiary characters. Whereas,
yeah, and when you're first introducing somebody, it's hard to put too much of that in, or it can get in the way. So it's good that they're kind of introducing this. But
yeah, but she's like I said, she works in the IT department. So Oliver, you know, brings her a laptop that has been shot up. And she's like, what happened? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, I was at the coffee shop and I spilled some coffee on it. And I can't tell if she, like, she looks like she might be kind of a dumb blonde, but she also says, you know, listen, these look like bullet holes. And he kind of explains it off. And she's like,
yeah, he says, well, the coffee shop's in a really dangerous neighborhood.
Yeah.
So,
and so, you know, she's like, okay. And so she continues, you know, working with him on it, and she also just like blurts out stuff too. Her filter seems to be a little off, cause she says something both to him in Lone Gunman and in Innocent Man. She says something else to Walter where she's like, oh, that could be kind of, you know, probably in her head, she's thinking, oh, that's misconstrued. misconstrued, and then she tries to fix it by saying something else, and then just continues to kind of put her foot in her mouth. So I like this character. I hope she sticks around. She it looks like the actress is you know, signed on to at least be a supporting character in the season here. So that's pretty cool. The third new appearance character is a character that should be familiar to any fans of that have been reading DC Comics for a while. This is a character named Deadshot, and he is a extreme marksman. In the comic books, he has been the rival or the, you know, the foe for Green Arrow or for the Flash at different times. He also I don't know if you can say starred in his own book. Well, he probably did have a miniseries at some point because he's that popular character. He's kind of like Wolverine in that sense because he's this kind of, or I guess he's more like the Punisher on Marvel's side. He's a hired gun, but he is like a perfect shot. So he's, I guess then that would make him kind of cross, I guess, between Punisher and Bullseye, who is a Daredevil villain. But he was in Suicide Squad as one of the members of that team, and he wears like this eyepiece that helps him see through the rifle on his scope or on his the scope on his rifle, let's say, so he can you know, shoot, because he shoots targets from, you know, crazy distances and stuff like that. And we see him, he murders a guy at the beginning that, like, it was a guy that Oliver was already going for, but, you know, would Oliver have killed him? You know, probably not. I don't remember what the reason that Oliver was going after this guy, but Deadshot, you know, takes him out.
He was on the list.
He was on the list, but was that why Deadshot was going for him? I think there was...
No, that's why Oliver was going.
You're right. Oliver was going for him because he was on the list, but, I mean, you know, Deadshot was going after him for some other reason. So they basically were, they were, you know, they were both going for the same guy, but Deadshot actually killed him. And so I was really excited when I heard they were going to put Deadshot on there. It's like, okay, cool. So, you know, they're not just coming up with these villains and other characters from the comics that are, you know, just by name only, right? Like Felicity Smoke or Yao Fei. It's like, you know, they don't have any superpowers, right? But, you know, you could have a, you know, you could have a guy on there called Clark Kent, but if he's never going to be Superman or something like that, you know, I don't care if he's called Clark Kent. It's probably not worthwhile to put him on there. So for them to choose Deadshot, he was you know, he's a dangerous enough kind of character and villain that I was really looking forward to seeing him in this. And wow, one episode, that's all we're gonna get.
I don't know. Well, that's, he's sure he had a dramatic finish at the end of this episode.
Can an arrow go through his eye? One of Oliver's arrows, which are not just like stone arrows. They're like, these are the sharpest looking. I mean, these are danger looking arrows, man.
Well, yeah, but he could come back though, because that actually did, you know, happen in the comic book. Green Arrow has shot people violently, and he came back. And I think that's what happened to Deadshot. One of the reasons that he hates Green Arrow in the comics.
Oh, okay. Well, and, you know, I mean, I thought you were going to go for the excuse that every superhero or supervillain has died in a comic book at some point. If you haven't, if you're a superhero or supervillain and you haven't died in a comic book, then you're really not all that. You know, I mean, Batman's died, Superman's died, Green Arrow's died. They've all come back at different times. So, yeah, you know, I guess you should never count somebody out. Just, you know, we saw the body, though. I mean,
you did. But you didn't see the police come because he had to leave right away with Diggle. And I'm actually getting Deadshot and Deathstroke confused.
Oh, right.
It was Deathstroke who got shot in the eye with the arrow.
Right, because that we were talking about that last week. Because when you see the Deathstroke mask on the island in the opening episode, there's an arrow or a spike or something sticking out through the eye, or the eye hole of the mask.
So that was the first thing I thought of, though, when I saw that he got shot in the eye. But I was confusing the two. They're different characters.
Deathstroke,
Deadpool. But my point is, he could still come back.
Oh, yeah, that's obviously that's a given. I mean, like, I mean, again, just kind of going because it's a superhero sort of thing. I mean, that's, I think that's a total, plausibility though. It does not look good for him, I will just say, based on the way that it was shot, you know, or photographed, you know, filmed for the show.
Right. So, like I said, earlier in the show, with him not being able to work alone to get over through some of the issues that he has, this episode used that as a theme, and it actually had some other characters that were working together. One of the people that were working with Oliver to help catch Deadshot, because he realized that it would be very difficult to catch him by himself, was Detective Lance.
Right, and he didn't want to.
I don't think either one of them wanted to much. So, I was actually surprised how easy it was to get him to work together with Oliver, as much as he seems to hate him.
Part of that to me, it feels like it's the constraint of a, you know, an hour long drama show, which in reality is what, about 44 minutes, something like that. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think it came down to just kind of one scene. Well, there were several scenes with Oliver and Detective Lance, but I think really only one scene with Arrow and Detective Lance. The one I'm thinking of is Lance is going out to his car, and Arrow, like, you know, kind of like the way Batman does, you know, he like shows up out of nowhere, and then when you turn around, he's gone. And
right.
So all of a sudden, Detective Lance is slammed down on the car hood, and Arrow's there, and he's got some sort of technical thing that he flips a switch on, and his voice sounds different. You know, it's you know, so it's, I don't know. That's you know, it just, you got to keep the characters from, I guess, guessing each other's identity. But you know, he basically is physically accosting Detective Lance, all the while telling him, "We're working for the same thing. I don't want, you know, whoever Deadshot's going after to get killed, but I can't protect everybody," because he wasn't sure where Deadshot was going to be, and there were multiple targets potentially inside a party. So he, you know, basically convinces the detective to, you know, bring the cops in, and then Oliver, you know, has a few words with Detective Lance later at the party. Of course, Oliver's keeping an eye on the detective, but the detective obviously doesn't know that Oliver is the vigilante.
Right, but he seems to have such a hatred for the whole idea of vigilantism and people doing it on their own, especially the way that you know, Oliver's doing it, even though he doesn't know it's Oliver yet. But
right. He's a definite by-the-book sort of detective, I think, as we see so far. But it's kind of weird because he doesn't really look the part. He's got like a, you know, a two-day growth of beard, and he always seems a little disheveled for you know, the head detective. Or, I don't know, maybe he's not the head detective, but he's, you know, a significant detective on the force.
Yeah.
Again, mentioning Batman, because I think that's something that we can still continue to draw parallels to.
Absolutely.
Detective Gordon at the time, you know, before he became commissioner and everything like that, he was, you know, kind of the only good cop on a bad force. So we don't see that. We know that Lance is a good cop, but he seems to be surrounded by other good cops. He's got a partner that he even works with, right, that they're investigating the different killings and, you know, everything else that's going on. But whereas Gordon seemed to gravitate towards wanting to work with Batman because he saw that he was a force to be reckoned with and that he could do something outside of the system that Gordon was unable to do, even as, you know, the only righteous man in a bad bunch. Lance, like you said, has a definite, distaste for, you know, anyone, not even, you know, even if Diggle probably were to try something, you know, that's outside the law just to protect somebody. You know, he just hates that vigilantism, and it, you know, it's got to be done kind of by the book, and that's how he gets his stuff done.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, I don't want him to be, I don't want him to jump on the bandwagon too fast. I think that would be a really good character development with him if he had a struggle with himself working with Arrow.
You've got to keep him as the foil for Arrow because it adds the dramatic tension between Oliver and Laurel then.
Oh, for sure. Well, so those two work together, to a point in this episode.
Or learn how to work together, yeah.
Yeah, and then you also saw Moira and Thea working together a little bit. You know, they were kind of coming to a little bit of an agreement, at least she was the mom was trying. And then Tommy, Oliver's friend Tommy, and Laurel. Laurel was showing that she had some pretty good physical skills there too when she needed it. So.
Yeah, and Tommy, you know, is we found out that, you know, they had been dating and everything like that, but they were also trying to, you know, look out for Oliver because he seemed to be getting in a little trouble that, you know, they were wanting to, you know, make sure that he was okay. I think that was there was a little bit of that in the second episode. It was after the Deadshot affair. Oliver, I guess, you know, had disappeared from the party and nobody knew where he went because obviously he went to change into his Arrow costume and take care of Deadshot. But, you know, Tommy and Laurel, I think in different ways, both were kind of teaming up to make sure that he was okay because he's their friend. Oliver's their friend and they want to make sure he's okay. But they also, you know, they've been together through the past 5 years and are just, you know, I think they needed someone and you know, they learned to work together. They couldn't be alone. And so, you know, two best friends, basically, I think like we had mentioned previously, just, you know, decided to team up. So,
yeah.
So the big, reveal or the big kind of shocker moment for the end of the Deadshot episode was the fact that, Diggle got shot by one of Deadpool's bullets. And of course they're not just normal bullets. They're laced with a poison. So, Oliver, you know, had a choice to make. So he chose to save Diggle's life and took him back to, I think what we're going to call the Arrow Cave. Right. Is that kind of what it is?
So, well, that is what it is.
Yeah.
That's what it was called in the comic for a while. So
yeah, early on, that's what they were calling it. And, so he reveals, you know, to him at the end of that episode that he's the vigilante. Well, he doesn't really even reveal it. He's just standing there in costume with his hood down and says, "Hey," and that's how it ends. And then they pick right up there at the beginning of an Innocent Man episode. And Diggle, I mean, he is just, he is so pissed off about this. I mean, what was your take on this? I mean, like, why was he so upset that, I mean, is it that Oliver lied to him or just that he can't handle the character, you know, being kind of like Detective Lance outside the law?
Well, I think probably more that it was Oliver lying to him. But I also think that he's struggling with his own kind of ideas of what he should be doing. And you kind of saw that when he was talking to his was it his sister-in-law or sister?
His sister-in-law. It was the sister-in-law, girl,
right,
that his brother was married to. Right.
Okay. And you know, they kind of hinted that he had gone through some pretty hard stuff in his recent past. So I think just the idea of him being somehow involved with what Oliver's been doing, I think he almost felt like he was kind of sucked into it without being asked.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? And he didn't necessarily, I don't think it wasn't that he wanted to, it's just that he didn't want to not be able to make the decision himself. So, and you know, when you have somebody like that seems like an honorable person, like a proud person, they can get upset, when there are situations that they can't control.
So yeah, well,
I don't know. That's how I took it anyway.
Yeah, I guess, you know, he's injured and Oliver saves his life. And then, oh, you know, by the way, I'm the vigilante and you want to work with me. And like you said, that's probably pretty accurate. He didn't have the choice. It's like, well, you know, I didn't want to know any of this kind of stuff. And so what he does, he basically says, I quit, meaning he quits being the bodyguard, which again leads to, I think, some great comic relief pieces because for the past first three episodes, Oliver is finding new ways to ditch Diggle, right? And that's... That ends up being pretty funny. So now we've got a new guy on, Rob Scott. And so Oliver pulls the same tricks with him. And there's even one point where Diggle's sitting there. They're at a diner. And Oliver's like, oh, I got to go to the restroom. And there's a, you know, a pause. And Diggle's like, oh, man, that boy is long gone. He's gone. And, you know, Rob is like, what? He's just kind of looking around.
I think you get the impression that it was a lot easier for him to get away from the new guy than it was for Diggle.
The new guy is definitely not as competent as Diggle, which really enforces, like, why Diggle's character is so cool. Because he's capable. He can almost keep up with Oliver. It's like, you know, if Oliver slips up and just makes one mistake, like Diggle would have caught him. And I think we saw that in, I think it was the second episode where Oliver was trying to get out. He was like cutting through the kitchen and Diggle actually was waiting there for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, Diggle knows this stuff, but...
Well, and I think Diggle actually knew, you know, not exactly what he was doing, but I mean, I think he knew... I think he had an idea of the kind of stuff that was going on, which is, I think, why Oliver trusts him.
You think so? Well, I'll go back to that kind of those flimsy excuses that Oliver gives. He's not a great liar, I guess. You know, he said he was going out just trying to hook up with women and stuff like that, which Diggle seemed like he didn't want to know that. But I don't know, maybe because I'm being able to see through it, but, you know, it's just... It seems like, well, it's obvious because we know he's Arrow, and you kind of just write that off. But maybe the excuses are supposed to be kind of flimsy, and that's a character point that, like you said, Diggle maybe was able to see through that.
Well, I think, I don't think he knew what he was doing, but I think he knew he wasn't doing the stuff that he was saying. I think he knew he wasn't going out and hooking up with women and being the sort of secret identity playboy kind of guy, you know? So, and I don't think he ever really quite had a grip on exactly what he was doing, but he knew he wasn't just being the old Oliver. So
right. Well, so anyway, Diggle leaves, and there's all this funny stuff going on with Rob Scott. But Diggle goes and talks to his sister-in-law, and we find out that his brother had been killed, and you know, under mysterious circumstances, stuff like this, and his sister, you know, or he, I guess he's telling his sister what Oliver's offer is, but, you know, in kind of a really veiled way, right? And she's like, you know, you just need to kind of follow your heart, because Diggle, he wants to do right. He was a Marine, right? He was in...
an
Army. Yeah, I think it was a Marine, and he's stationed in Kandahar. And so, you know, he felt good about the service that he was doing, and I think he wants to continue doing that. So he does end up seeking Oliver back out to say that, you know, he'll take the job, but he's not signing on to be a sidekick, which is a great line because, you know, as superheroes have, you know, as Batman has a sidekick, Green Arrow has a sidekick, and Speedy and everything like that, and you always have, you know, the sidekick. But this character Diggle would actually work as a partner, and he actually, you know, makes that distinction to Oliver, which is great. Oliver speaks up that he's not looking for anyone really to save him, but of course he does. He does need someone to save him because, as we talked about, you've got these characters that have to learn to work together and not be alone. He needs someone to be covering his back, and what better person than your bodyguard, you know, who is, he's looking out for Oliver personally, and he's also looking out for Oliver professionally as the vigilante here as well. So, was there anything else you wanted to add on the Diggle storyline there?
No, I really like the character of Diggle. He just seems like such an honorable guy and somebody that you could count on. With your life, and I think that Oliver sees that in him too. So, I'm kind of anxious to see where he goes if he kind of evolves into somebody that is, you know, not like a sidekick, but more like a superhero partner kind of guy. So Well, so who knows? Maybe, yeah. maybe he'll end up being a you know, Green Lantern or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that'd be interesting. I was going to say that you know, I'd probably out of all the characters on the show, maybe other than Felicity, I'd love to just go have a drink with Diggle. He just seems a really cool guy to hang out with. I mean, it sounds like he's got a lot of cool stories to tell about, you know, adventures that he's had, you know, doing real good work for his country. And, you know, he's obviously had some pain and stuff like that, but he seems, like you said, he's just a really honorable kind of guy. So those are some really great things that have happened in the episode. I just want to touch on what I kind of call bad CW moments. Innocent Man, I'm looking at you. There were at least two sequences, if not three, where we had Arrow. And I'm going to distinguish, I'm going to try to distinguish as we talk about stuff that, you know, it'll be Arrow versus Oliver, you know, when he's in costume. But Arrow was talking to Laurel. They're up on a random rooftop, like somewhere in the city, trading information. And he's got his little sound changer, so she doesn't know his voice. And he's looking one way, and he's, you know, she's saying, you know, we both fight for justice. And he's like, you know, he's like, but not in the same way. And then he, you know, slides off on a Arrow line down to another, like swings off like Spider-Man kind of. And I'm just like, this is just, it's forced. It was cheesy. It's a bad way to get your characters together. It just didn't feel right because, like I said, it happened like three times. There were two scenes on a rooftop and then one scene in either her office or her apartment where he shows up. And, it's just, it's like, Lois Lane looking at Superman and not for the life of her seeing that it's Clark Kent. It's just, it's all, it really stretches the bounds of credibility, I think. I don't know. To me, that just like jumped out at me, and so far the show has been really good. It's kept my attention focused, and there's nothing that's really felt forced, and these moments felt forced. Even some of the dialogue was kind of stilted in them.
Well, I agree. I didn't mind it maybe quite as much as you, but I would like to see them kind of getting away from that stereotypical kind of superhero and you know, girlfriend type interaction like that, because you see that all the time. I mean, you see it in Superman, you see it in Spider-Man, in any time the superhero interacts with the girlfriend, it's always something similar to this with the dramatic exit. So, you know, it happened in this one. If it doesn't happen too much often, then I can forgive them for that. I just kind of hope they get away from it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in this episode, the Innocent Man episode ended with a pretty big, cliffhanger here that I want to take just a couple minutes to talk about.
Yeah.
So, Oliver is in his home, and Detective Lance and his crew bust in and say, you know, you're under arrest for being the vigilante. And what? Oh my gosh. Like, that was quick. We're four episodes in and he's already been outed by the cops.
So what happened? He was in that prison they were talking about earlier, and they found some video footage from a security camera of him grabbing disguise.
It was actually the security footage. If you go back and look at it, it's the security footage from the previous episode, from the Deadshot one, where he's.
That's it's in the building where Deadshot is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's where the party was. Right. Yep. But it was the fact that they were looking at security footage from the prison break that Oliver was involved in, and Detective Lance made the kind of the jump. Oh, wait a second. There's probably security footage from that other incident.
That's right. And actually, now that you say that, I put those two scenes together because they showed him grabbing his costume out of the, I guess it was like a trash can. Something like that, and running up the stairs there. So, and I'm wondering how he got the eye makeup on so fast in that. But anyway, so, I mean, he's just really good with the rouge. But after seeing that, they bust into his house and they catch him right away. So
how's he going to get out of this?
I I don't know. I will say this though. Watching that scene, that scene bothered me, like the way the one with Laurel bothered you a little bit. Why would he be so sloppy? That just doesn't seem in character for him.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been so careful up to then. The way he would kind of get out of a building right before the police came in, like that I think the first episode when he got knocked out. I don't know. It seems so sloppy. So I'm not sure what's going on there.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, cause I don't know what they're going to, I mean, they're charging him with being the vigilante and stuff like this. And I don't know if they can place him at any of the crimes or if he's got, you know, an alibi or anything like that. I'm wondering if he's going to have to play like the crazy guy home from the island card, and just be, you know, the reason I've been acting so weird is because, you know, I was just on an island for 5 years and I was forced to eat, you know, kill and eat dead chickens and, eat crunched up herbs and stuff like this. So.
It's not a bad defense. I try to use that. It seems to work every once in a while. So yeah, I was late for work yesterday and that was my excuse. It worked out great.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. But I just don't know, you know, it's like I said, you know, fourth episode in, it's like, this is not where I thought that they were going to go this early. Like usually you do this as like a season finale maybe or something like this, but you know, because then there's more time for you to get to know the character, but we're just getting to know all these characters and all of a sudden, boom, Detective Lance has put it all together and he's got video footage of him grabbing his costume. Like you say, it's like, wow. Okay, so we'll see where that goes.
Well, you do know that throughout the series, I mean, and this is the same in the comic, but his secret identity doesn't stay quite as secret
sure.
as some other superheroes. There's quite a few people that know who he is. So, maybe that comes into play. I don't know. Maybe they'll figure out some way to get him out of that. So,
the other big mystery for this episode is what the heck is his mom up to, Moira? She's hiding information from Walter. Walter is doing work late one night, and he discovers $2.6 million is missing from the company, which for a multi-billion dollar company, it seems pretty petty. But he's talking to her about it, and she's like, oh, yeah, you know what that is? I lent it to somebody for a startup fund or something like that, and I'll make sure we get paid back. And he's like, oh, you know, whatever. That's not a big deal. He gets with Felicity. She does some investigating for Walter and discovers that the money was put into an LLC and that it's called Tempest, so I started like Googling like Tempest in DC Comics. And I didn't find, you know, there might be like a villain or a hero called Tempest, but I didn't find any specific like organization, like not like Star Labs or LexCorp or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, so Walter finds this warehouse that belongs to this Tempest group or Tempest program or whatever it is, and he figures out the secret password that she set up to get in, which is her dead husband's name, after it's not her children's names. And he goes in and there's the Queen's Gambit like salvaged. It looks, you know, it's, I don't know what, like three or four pieces there, but it's the boat that went down that crashed in the, you know, 5 years ago, and it's been sitting in a warehouse here. And it's like, okay, this is weird. So she's obviously involved with some kind of mystery person, as we saw from episode 2. There was nothing going on in episode 3, and then in episode 4 here, she gets back into the same limo to talk to this person. We find out it's a mystery man. It's a actor named John Barrowman, and he's from Torchwood and Doctor Who. I don't know if you've ever seen any of those. He plays a character called Captain Jack Harkness. Really
right.
Cool dude. But he, you know, he's some business guy in a suit that's in the back of a limo and seems to know what they're talking about. And they both start discussing the list, like the vigilante is targeting the list. So they know about this list as well. And we found out from one of the previous episodes that the image that's on the cover of Oliver's book, the weird symbol, I don't even know how to describe it, is the same thing that's on this guy's portfolio. So it's all connected somehow, but Oliver's mom's involved. So I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss. I think we just, there's not enough information even to like speculate at this point.
No, I think they're just kind of, just scratching the surface of where that mystery is going to kind of lead, you know, I hope it's big enough to warrant them salvaging this boat, because it seems strange that they would they would get this. I mean, I think they sunk it in the first place. So why, you know, what?
Yeah, what it was sunk, right? Or there was an explosion on it or something. I think we had had heard in the previous one of the previous episodes. So it wasn't actually an accident.
Yeah, I don't think so. At least that's how it appeared. And, and so why pull it up again to begin with? There must be something in there that they needed. But So I'm kind of intrigued by the mystery. I will say that I think Moira is one of the worst liars I've ever heard. You know, oh, that money. Oh, you know what I did with that money? I gave it to somebody.
Well, maybe
did I say I gave it to somebody? Oh, no, I meant I don't know.
Maybe that's where Oliver gets his ability from to be able to not lie effectively or something like that. So, I don't know. This is seeming like more and more like a J.J. Abrams kind of story, because you know you get a little bit in one episode, and the next episode they reveal a little bit more, and then they kind of turn it another direction, and you get something totally unexpected. So I guess we'll
something that appeals to me about the show. So I'm completely okay with that.
It is. It's a good hook to get you coming back week after week. Another thing that is bringing me back week after week is to try to see what kind of references they put into the comic books here. And we've already touched on a few of these, but there are a few other little minor ones here I want to get to just here at the very end of the episode. So as you mentioned earlier, we saw Laurel show some of her fighting skills. So in my opinion, I think that's a little taste of what we're going to get for Black Canary. Because she is she probably won't have her canary scream, but she will be skilled in hand-to-hand combat. And she takes this guy down pretty easily. Obviously, she claims being, you know, trained by a police officer for her father, you know, has given her those abilities.
I'm excited to see that, but I hope they don't rush it. I would kind of like that to take a while to get to her, if they're even going to do it.
I think they have to do it. They have to do it at some point. I mean,
I hope so.
Now the thing is, I think it's going to happen. All at some point, they're going to the writers of the show are going to tip their hand to the audience and start calling. Oliver's going to start calling her Pretty Bird. And and then we're going to see Black Canary show up really shortly after that, I think. There's some references to some DC Universe place names, including when they were going over Deadshot's portfolio, they were listing some places where he had killed, including Markovia, which is it's kind of a Eastern European country in the DC Universe, as well as Corto Maltese, which is a... I guess like a Central American island, which was also coincidentally mentioned in Batman, the original Batman movie by Tim Burton. We get to see Big Belly Burger. Which is I remember that showing up in Superman and Adventures of Superman a lot. So
yes, I love the Big Belly Burger reference. That was awesome.
Which is kind of like a Bob's Big Boy ripoff restaurant kind of thing in the DC universe. And then we've also got mention of another city called Bloodhaven, which is where Nightwing, who was the original Robin, when he grew up, he became Nightwing, and that's kind of his area that he hangs out in. It's sort of like it's a really bad, run-down kind of town, maybe like Detroit or something like that.
A town named Bloodhaven is a bad part of town. That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
It's all rainbows and unicorns.
It sounds like such a peaceful place to live.
Yeah. and then as we discussed on our last episode, you know, Diggle being John Diggle, the bodyguard here, being a reference to Andy Diggle, who is one of the writers for Green Arrow. Well, that even goes a level deeper. We find out that John's brother on the show was named Andrew Diggle, Andy for short, right? So that's a direct homage to the writer. The replacement for Diggle, Rob Scott, worked for the MCU, which I don't know if you picked up on that. There was a brief throwaway line for that. That's the Metropolis, or yeah, it's the Metropolis Crime Unit, I think. It's the Metropolis Police Force.
I miss that one.
Which is where Superman, you know, lives. And then one thing I noticed on, not really a reference necessarily to the comics, but Floyd Lawton's chest he's got tattoos of the names of the people that he's killed all over himself. And, of course, one of those We don't find out about this until episode 4, but in episode 3, there's thought that he killed Diggle's brother. Oliver kind of puts that together. Well, if you freeze frame and look at his chest, you see that Andrew Diggle is a name clearly written on his chest in episode 3. So if you're, you know, watching for that kind of stuff, you found that out kind of about an episode before the characters on the show did. But one thing I was noticing, that I freeze framed Oliver's diary in episode 3, and he had four names that you could see on there: Ken Shane, James Holder, which was the guy that got shot at the beginning by Deadshot.
So he
crossed his name off, right? Even though Oliver didn't take care of it, he just crossed the name off on the list anyway. Mark Pillar or Pilar, and it looks like Yasmin Soze. And those are the names that you can read. Well, I think Oliver's going to find that Deadshot, he should have kept Deadshot around, because this was a person that was doing his work for him. When you freeze frame and look at his chest, besides a ton of other names that he's got on there, you can read the names Ken Shane, James Holder, he's putting on because he just killed him, Mark Pilar, and Yasmin Soze. So,
oh, plus you got another copy of the list, which is always good in case you forget it at home. You know, you can just
tattoo it on your body.
Exactly. There you go. See. So, but see, now there's another reason I think that he's not dead. See, because you know, that would be evidence. They would see those names on his body, and Oliver would find out who it is. You know, even though the police have him and all, and he would find out that those names were on the list. So,
well, yeah,
I don't think he's dead.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. I guess we'll just have to keep watching to figure that out. So, well, that's about all we have for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Yeah. And if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to, you know, give us some feedback on iTunes. And you can also contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or you can visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.